You're listening to Kathy Is In with Kathy DeBono.
Places, everyone, places!
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Kathy Is In. Happy New Year. This is our first installment of 2012 on Kathy Is In. I am Kathy DeBono, your host, and I have a friend with me in the studio today. It's our little Becca Cates.
Hello, everyone. Happy New Year.
Those of you who haven't met Becca Cates before, although I think everybody has by now, huh?
Probably. I'm around quite a bit these days.
Becca Cates is the pioneer of a website that I think is such a fantastic service to the LGBTQ community called iwanttheworldtoknow.org. It's actually how we met, isn't it?
It is how we met, yes. I asked Kathy to participate in it as a storyteller and to share her coming out story on the website. And I think that was over 2 years ago.
It was.
And
you came over to my apartment to shoot it.
I did. And I was super nervous.
You were visiting from New York.
I was visiting from New York. I was looking at graduate schools out here. And I brought my little video camera and my tripod and set it up and interviewed you and Jill. And
a bottle of champagne.
I did. I brought two bottles of champagne.
I think you did. I think we drank them both as well.
Yes. And then we stayed in touch and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
We kind of became sort of our niece.
Yes.
So to speak.
Yes.
That's an interesting... It's interesting how we use turns of phrase in families to sort of... What's the word I'm looking for? To describe relationships.
Yes.
Because you really are kind of like our family.
Yeah. Well, and you guys are amazing to me. So, you know.
Aw.
Now it's... Let's get all sentimental.
Well, you did... You know, today we're going to talk about... Listen, I don't know about you. I might be a little bit sick about the holidays. I mean, sick of talking about them. Sometimes, you know, the music is beaten into your head. You can't eat one more cookie. You can't eat one more piece of cake. Although I always seem to find room for
donuts.
But the holidays are full of so much energy and intensity, and it's a pendulum swing, really. There's the intensity of the pain or the discomfort or missing someone or being separate from your family. And then there's the intensity of why the holidays feel so special in the first place. Sometimes you have a wonderful, harmonious experience, and it can be a very healing time. It can also be sort of what's the word I want here? It can hold sort of a microscope over the things in your life that need your attention or that need some healing, because the holidays roll around and all of a sudden we're bombarded with commercials, we're bombarded with advertising, we're bombarded with everybody's wishing you a happy holiday and it's the most wonderful time of the year. And what if November and December rolls around and you're not in that frame of mind? Mm-hmm. What do you do about that? I have to say, every year when it rolls around, I feel like it's a huge interruption. I'm always sort of behind on everything and trying to keep up with my life. And now it's the holidays. Now I have to go shopping. Now I have to spend money that I don't have. And I want to, because I love giving presents. So you've got to find that money that you don't have. And in the back of your mind, you're judging yourself for not having that money. And then you've got to figure out what to buy people. Thank God for Amazon wish lists.
Yes.
I think they're brilliant. I think if everyone out there does not yet have an Amazon wish list.
I know, you made me make one this year.
Go make one. What a great idea.
It is pretty great.
Yeah.
It's fun too.
It is fun. And it's not just books. It's not just books anymore, people. Amazon has everything.
They do. Curtains.
I wonder if they'd, you know, pay me for this.
I doubt it.
Probably. Like, Kathy, we're Amazon. We're doing just fine.
Yeah.
But seriously, it made life a whole lot easier. Didn't have to go physically shopping. I could do all of it in one fell swoop. You can send your items to different locations. It was so amazing.
It was great.
Yeah. And so Becca traveled with Jill and I back to New York this year for the holidays. To be with my mom. And now Becca's Jewish. And as you know, Jill is Jewish. And I am not Jewish. So Jill and I grew up with Christmas for the holidays. Jill's a converted Jew for the last few years. But, she warned her rabbi she wasn't giving up Christmas.
Well, Christmas is pretty spectacular. I mean, for me, being Jewish, I always felt left out at Christmas.
I know.
It's sad.
You know, I know you love it on some level, and then you would come home, and we'd be at my mom's house looking at the Christmas tree, and I could look at Becca, and I could see her feeling sort of...
Left out,
or like a little hint of harumph.
Yeah, no, there's definitely the Scrooge in me with Christmas, because... You know what it is? The thing that gets me the most is the music on the radio. I think there were two radio stations that are on my, you know, fast, you know, my buttons on in my car. And two of them were completely dedicated to Christmas music, like right after Thanksgiving was over. And, you know, I mean, it's not something I can relate to being Jewish, because my family grew up or I grew up in my family without ever having a Christmas tree in the house. We only celebrated Hanukkah. And also, Hanukkah is not really an important Jewish holiday. It's not one of the more important ones. So, you know, it's funny. But my mother, who is the sweetest woman in the world.
She is. We love your mom.
Yeah, my mom is amazing. She, every year, would put up a million Hanukkah decorations. Like, it was sad. Like, it was a little sad. I mean, it was...
What do Hanukkah decorations consist of?
Banners.
Dreidels.
Yeah.
Okay, banners of what?
Banners that say, Happy Hanukkah.
Oh, okay. That's self-explanatory.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty. And then she got these little, they look like Christmas stockings, but they're not. They have little Jewish stars on them.
Like, what do stockings have to do with Hanukkah at all?
Nothing. But she,
see? Yeah. It's that energy.
But what
of
do
Christmas.
They have to do with Christmas?
Well, I don't know. They fit into the legends of Christmas. I mean, I don't know that they have anything to do with the religious celebrations of Christmas. Maybe maybe they have something to do with the wise men.
I have no idea.
Bringing gifts to Jesus. Maybe they brought them in socks.
Maybe.
Does anyone know why we use stockings at Christmas? If you do, call me. I want to know. It's 818-602-4929. I now need to know.
That's so funny. Actually, I have a funny stocking story. When I was six I must have been older, but my brother was a little boy. He was maybe 6 or 8, and we went skiing over Christmas because, you know, we could go. We don't celebrate Christmas. We were in New Hampshire, and my brother that year wrote Santa Claus a letter because he was so he felt so left out, and all he wanted was Sega Genesis for Christmas.
Oh.
And he was so cute, and he wrote Santa a letter, and my mother wrote him a letter back from Santa because she felt bad. So we were in New Hampshire, and I woke up at like 5 a.m. It was Christmas morning, and he had put his little baby gym sock on the fireplace.
Oh.
in the cabin we were staying in. It was a tiny little gym sock, and the next morning, lo and behold, there was a Sega Genesis under his
Santa,
stocking.
Mommy Santa
and,
got his letter,
and for one instant, I believed for one second.
Wasn't that a magical instant?
It was magical, and I must have been I'm 2 years older than my brother, so however old he was, I was 2 years older. But
I often wondered about that. I grew up with friends in school, obviously, who were Jewish, and you know, we did everything together. We played together. We went through school together. Had our little school plays together, and then Christmas would roll around, and of course, as a child, it's when Christmas is so magical and amazing. And, you know, my cousins and I would start countdown calendars with each other for like 60 days out. We couldn't wait for it. And I remembered thinking about my one friend, Mandy Holland. Mandy, if you're out there, I will never forget you. You were my little friend when we were in grade school. I don't know where you are. Maybe I should look her up on Facebook. But Mandy was a little Jewish girl who loved Christmas.
Aww.
And, you know, we would bring our snacks and our cards, you know, little paper Christmas cards you'd give all your friends, you'd pass around with your juice and your cupcakes. And Mandy, I remember, would make hers. She would get special stationery, and she would draw by hand her little holly leaves around the edges. And I always remember thinking that I could feel that urge to be included, like that Christmas was so much fun. There's all these things on the TV, all these, you know, Christmas specials and Rudolph and all that. And I always wondered, why can't the Jewish kids play?
Yeah.
And how does Santa know who the Jewish kids are?
Well, that's a whole different story. But yeah, I mean, I remember, I mean, we celebrated Christmas with our friends outside of our home. So I had a babysitter who celebrated Christmas, and every year we would go decorate her tree. So that was...
That's fun.
Yeah.
Hey, caller, you're on the line with Kathy and my friend Becca. Who's this? Who are you? What's your name?
This is Sarah.
Oh, it's Blake, man.
Hello.
What's going on?
Well, I called to tell you why the Christmas stocking came about.
You know, I should have known you would have the answer.
Yeah,
to this.
I'm not surprised that you always give us what we need.
Enlighten.
All right. Well, it's as everything that comes from a lot of the Christmas traditions and stuff like that are from pagan things that happened a long time ago. But in Europe, about the 4th century, there was a bishop named Saint Nicholas, and he was the tradition is he used to go out around on a white horse and giving anonymous gifts by night.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the tradition started from, is that he would put them in their stockings, the presents and stuff in the stockings of the children.
How did they know to put out their stockings? See, there's a little piece missing there. I need to know.
Or did he go into their sock drawer and just stick them in?
Was St. Nicholas some sort of creep?
Well, this is
no, they would
Saint
hang
Nick.
Their stockings out How did to dry they... by the fire, because that's what they did. They washed
oh,
their
to dry by the, fire. By the fire.
Oh, that makes sense.
That makes sense.
So that's where they would put their little gifts and things like that inside the stocking.
That is so... Well, thank you very much for that information.
That makes
she
a lot of sense.
She knew what century it was and everything.
Did you Wikipedia it?
No.
Did you just know it off the top of your head?
Yeah, I did. Well, I've studied this a lot because I wanted to know where Christmas came
That's
from.
That's amazing.
I was always very interested in that sort of history because... The Christian side is that it's the birth of Christ, and that represents that. And then it was originally an old pagan tradition for the winter solstice.
Huh.
And a lot of those traditions that we celebrate in the United States come from those old pagan traditions.
That is really fascinating.
I mean, there's a Christmas tree, same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a bunch of them.
You know, now that she's mentioning it, it sounds familiar to me. The whole I think I've heard this story before.
It never occurred to me the stockings over the fireplace to dry. That's genius.
And I always, maybe you know this, Sarah, where did the name Santa Claus come from? Now, here's my theory. When I was growing up, I had my grandma around who died when I was 12, but she was from Italy and she barely spoke any English. So she had a really broken accent. And if my grandmother were going to say Saint Nicholas, it would sound like this. Saint Nicholas. So I... always thought
that is
oh well it was my grandma who was saying Saint Nicholas and it sounded like Santa Claus. Where did the name Santa Claus come from, do you know?
Actually, you're right.
I'm right?
You're right.
Listen to that. That's so exciting.
Well, it was actually people, I believe, that called him Santa Claus. That was the name, Santa Claus.
Who's this?
The little Dutch children used to call him Santa Claus.
Uh-huh.
But they would say it so quickly or so quite fast that it sounded like Santa Claus. Sinterklaas, Santa Claus.
Very interesting.
I knew it.
That's pretty genius.
Thanks for calling, Sarah. Stay tuned in because we might need more information about something else.
Yes. She's
That's
so smart.
Pretty interesting. She's a smarty pants. She reads a lot. She reads a lot, that Sarah Blakeman.
Yes. But that's so interesting.
It is interesting. So we're talking about the holidays and specifically, you know, now that we're past them, the energy of the holidays and what they can bring about in terms of our healing or in terms of requiring some healing. I feel like the holidays are an intensified time that put ourselves and our feelings and our relationships, most of all, under a microscope for examination. And we have this idealized way of thinking that our relationships should be and that at Christmas, that's when we're going to, you know, realize the fundamental wonderfulness of all of our relationships. And I imagine that that's going to put a microscope on just the places that need healing in these relationships, or they might step up to surprise you in ways you didn't see coming.
Mm-hmm.
I tweeted a little bit yesterday about my holiday story, so I'm going to share it now. The number is 818-602-4929. And we want to hear about your holiday healing stories. If you noticed anything about them that you need to heal from, grow from, expand from in your relationships, or if something about them surprised you and you had a nice healing experience. So here's my story. 20 years ago, literally this season, I came out to my mom. I was in college. I had fallen in love with my first girlfriend. I knew myself for the first time. I knew what was going on with me. And I came out. Now, I had a mom who was the world's most wonderful mom in terms of my peers and my friends and growing up. She was always the cool mom. I never had to lie to my mom growing up. If I was going to go out and have a few drinks, I could tell her as long as I was safe. My parents kept a very close eye on us and kept us safe, but they also gave us enough trust that we could feel confident that we didn't have to lie to them and sneak around and do things and get ourselves in trouble. So when I came out to my mother, and specifically knowing that she had a gay cousin who was like one of her favorite people on the planet, I thought this wasn't going to be a problem, and I was sufficiently wrong. It shot my mom into a world of confusion and a world of disappointment, which I was not used to. I was thoroughly committed to impressing my mom, like most kids are, and keeping her happy. And so I was shocked. And without getting into a lot of detail about it, and, you know, my coming out story is on iwanttheworldtoknow.org, actually, if you're really interested to hear it. But it was not one of the easier coming out stories. I did not have a clear path. I had lots of problems. And my family never kicked me out of the family. She would never do that. And she never claimed to not love me. She would never go that far. And I know there's lots of people out there that have to deal with that. But it was sufficiently difficult and horrifyingly hard. My mom wouldn't meet any of my girlfriends for 5 or 6 years. This was really the case. And my mom came on a video blog that Jill and I used to do called The Gloves Are Off, which we will still do from time to time. Or no, she was on What's Your Problem? Mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
On iwanttheworldtoknow.org. That
my mom's story? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Oh, great. What do they look up?
Well, you can just go, and it's a blog. You can search. You can type in Kathy, and then both of them will come up.
I really want to encourage people to watch the episode with my mother because, you know, this was a couple of years ago, but she came on my video blog to share. And if you know my mother at all, she's so shy. She is so completely the opposite of myself. I'm very comfortable talking to people on camera, on a mic, in front of a crowded room. My mom is horrified if you're just going to take a Polaroid snapshot of her.
Oh, God, you can't even take a picture of her.
I mean, she's completely the opposite, so completely shy. And she went through her learning curve with this, and she still to this day carries shame about how she went through this learning curve. But this was, remember, 20 years ago, and she did a lot of growing and a lot of changing in ways that I and my sisters maybe didn't see possible. You know, we were just hoping for some sort of peace to happen. We were just hoping for some sort of unspoken peace where I could just have a girlfriend and bring her around and not have it be this big problem. Well, that took a while. And I just want to cut to 20 years later. I got engaged to my lovely and gorgeous and wonderful girlfriend, Jill Bennett. And my family knows her. They met her a couple of times. And this Christmas, we were going home to share it with the rest of our family, with my extended family, my cousins and my aunts and my uncles. We have a big Italian family. And when I first came out, my mom wanted me to hide it from everyone. You know, she was like, it's okay that I know. All right, fine. You had to tell me. You don't have to tell everybody. Not everybody has to know. Like a lot of parents go through this. A lot of people get told this. Why don't you just keep it to yourself? Just, you know, do what you need to, but don't talk about it. I fell into that category. But here we are 20 years later. And my family is very different, and over the years has grown to be very different. And my girlfriends have come home with me for the holidays. And it had long since changed since those early days. But this is a whole new step, introducing marriage and engagement. And I wasn't really sure what to expect. My mom sort of is very supportive, but she's not an activist. You know, my mom isn't out there waving pee flags around. She's just not that person. She's very quiet and keeps to herself. And so I wasn't really sure how involved she would be, or how involved anyone in my family would be, for that matter. I was sure they'd be supportive and, you know, give me a hug, but I wasn't really expecting a whole lot more, and I would have been happy with that. Which shows you the lull, the sleeping lull that you end up in when you just sort of start to settle for less than what you really want. And I didn't even know that. And mm-hmm. And I didn't even know that I had been settling for less, and I didn't have to, because this is what happened. I called my mom and I said, Mom, I need your help with this. I think more like a boy in these kinds of ways. I just got engaged, and I want to, in addition to, you know, getting engaged, I want to give Jill something that's meaningful. I want to give her a gift that she can keep, you know, maybe a watch, maybe something I can get engraved, something sentimental that we can keep through our lives together and remember it as a gift of this time. And And so my mom was like, all right, well, let me try to help you. And we were online looking at watches, and I couldn't really find one I liked. And the more we talked about it, the more she started to understand what my point was with the gift. And she said, well, I have this necklace, and I cut her off right there. Because my mom is the queen of going shopping, buying a bunch of things, and you go home, you're like, oh, I forgot to get something for grandma or for aunt so-and-so. And she's like, oh, well, I have this gift basket, or I have this, you know, these slippers. And I said, mom, I don't want to give her something that, she was like, no, wait, let me finish. This is a necklace that's meaningful to me. It's a little heart with diamonds on it, and your father gave it to me 20 years ago for Valentine's Day. And I've worn it for years and years, and it's meaningful to me. And I'd like to give it to you to give to Jill as an engagement gift. And I nearly died. I started to cry. Mm-hmm. I couldn't imagine from 20 years ago that we would come this far. Now, it was a yellow gold necklace because, you know, those were the times and that's what everyone wore. And now everyone's much more into silver and white gold. And she took the necklace and she had it dipped in white gold so that it would be more of the times and of what Jill might like. And she gave it to me, and we gave it to Jill on Christmas morning. I gave it to her in the presence of my mom and my sisters, who were also in on it. And the way that they were so excited to watch her open it, and the way that they surrounded us in front of the fireplace and hugged her and welcomed her to the family and were so excited to see her wearing their mom's diamond necklace that my father, who's now gone for the last 10 years, had given her as a gift in love all those years ago, to be there with my family made the last 20 years worth it. Mm-hmm. It was amazing. And I wanted to share this story because I went home expecting a level of acceptance. I've had it for many years now. I did not expect this level of complete participation. Mm-hmm. And then we went to my cousin's house for dinner, and we're chatting about it. And the next thing I know, my cousin comes out of the kitchen with a tray of champagne glasses, and they pass champagne around to my entire extended family. And everyone's raising their glasses to the new life for Jill and I, and welcoming her to the family. And then subsequently, because they're a large, sarcastic Italian family, they started giving her a lot of crap and telling her, you know, yeah, this is what it's like when you're in the family. But I was so amazed and so touched. And I just want to, you know, over the airwaves to the whole world, thank my family for being so wonderful. And they're at a point now where they're like, don't be ridiculous. We wouldn't have it any other way. But when you come through the growing curve that I came through, you don't even realize what you have and all the healing that has taken place until something like the holidays comes with a microscope and shines itself upon it. And so that was such a wonderfully beautiful gift for me, mm-hmm, of healing over the holidays that I didn't know that I needed, didn't know that I hadn't had yet, and didn't know was there for me. So I just wanted to share that, and I wondered if anyone else has a similar story or possibly something that, you know, put a microscope over things in the other direction. I have many Christmases where that was the case, and that was early on in the process with my mother. And another reason I like to tell this story is I want all of you out there to know that evolution does take place. If you stay connected with your family and your friends in peaceful, compassionate, patient harmony, and understand that it's their fears that get in the way of these kinds of things, and not their lack of love for you, but their true fears and a lot of things they've been taught over time from a lot of places that they were supposed to trust, you know, their teachers, their priests, their parents, the society, you know, they have to get over a lot of this fear. And I think giving them space to heal from that, being their support in that, gives them the room to continue to grow towards you. And here we are 20 years later, and I couldn't have imagined a better outcome. So the number is 818-602-4929. If you have any comments, questions, I want to hear about your holiday healing stories. Was there something out there that happened this year that balanced you? Was there something that showed itself, a relationship or a dynamic that lets you know you need to do a little more growing, or that relationship needs a little more healing? Maybe I can help you out with that, because sometimes it's just a simple tweak. 818-602-4929. Now, another fun thing for me over this break was Lil Becca Cates had a healing experience that you didn't see coming.
That's very true.
When we left town, you were so stressed out, mm-hmm, and so overwhelmed and so overworked. Mm-hmm. And we couldn't get you to take a break. We couldn't get you to watch TV without being on your laptop.
That's very true. yeah, I tend to, I'm a very type A personality, and I'm currently in graduate school, and I sort of got way overworked and overwhelmed with pretty much every aspect of my life. And I actually was really not looking forward to the holidays because I'm in the process of producing a film that I'm shooting in 3 weeks, and there was still a ton of work to be done, and the holiday really felt like a time where everything was shutting down and I wouldn't get stuff done. So I wasn't, you know, I was sort of dreading the holidays a little bit. I mean, and I was going to, my family, I'm originally from Boston, but they were coming down to New York, so I knew I was going to see them and it would be great. But I really wasn't looking forward to leaving LA because of the work I had in front of me. And to my surprise, when I came to New York, I was on my computer in Kathy's mom's house, and I had a production meeting that I had to have, and I was emailing someone that I that someone I had met earlier in the fall,
a special lady friend
that I met on a fluke trip to Vegas, which is so weird. I'm not a Vegas party type person.
So romantic.
Yeah, it really is romantic. We met in Vegas. It's probably the most unromantic thing possible. But, you know, I'd stayed in contact with her over the last few months. And I emailed her while I was in New York and said, hey, you know, I heard you're coming to L.A. You know, I know you mentioned you're coming to L.A. at the end of January. You know, what are the details? I'd love to see you. And I told her I was in New York for the holidays with my family. And she mentioned that she was also in New York, and she's originally from Toronto. So she told me she was in the, I think she was near the Catskills, and
which
she,
is not close to where
no,
we
no,
were.
No, no, no. It's
so
about 2 hours.
She took a train to come get to you.
Yeah, she took a 2-hour train ride to come see me for a little bit, and it was such a much needed respite from all the work I was doing. And it did. It made me realize, and that was a surprising healing process that Kathy's talking about. For me, at least, you know, I haven't really had time for relationships, friendships, or you know, romantic relationships. Even, you know, I've fallen out of touch with my family a lot because I've been so overworked and overwhelmed. But this really made me realize, you know, having time for myself and actually having fun and being giggly and excited and just feeling glowy, you know, having that.
The holidays forced you to shut down your myopic work vision.
Yeah.
And just get back in touch with yourself.
Yeah. And I needed it. And I didn't know I needed it. Just like you said, you didn't know you needed this incredible gesture from your family. I needed something. And I thought, it's hard being single and having to go through a lot of this work alone. And just to have a little bit of companionship, even for a little bit of time, was amazing. And
I love these stories because they point out something we don't think about lots of times. If you are a workaholic, or if you put a lot of pressure on yourself to succeed, or if you judge yourself at the end of the year by what you've accomplished, those holidays roll around and they sort of interrupt your home stretch. You know, it's like your last
chance.
They
absolutely interrupt.
They interrupt the home stretch. It's your last chance to, like, finish that paper if you're in school, or to, you know, get those final sales in, or make your quota for the year, or whatever it is, what kind of business you're doing. And I was watching you go through that. And I was watching you judge yourself for the, you know, the work that you have to get done for this film that you're producing this month. And you know, trying to insist that you have some downtime was really difficult because you just kept looking at me and like, I have to, why would you insist that I stop and play when I have all of this work to do? And
exactly.
It's all about, you need to feed yourself the fuel that you need to continually heal.
Yeah. I was out of gas. I was running on empty, and this, you know, gave me a bit more gas to go now with a new mindset into the new year with,
balance.
Yeah. I mean, and it's something I always struggle with is balance, but I think this year, you know, the holidays, and I also was in New York City, which is my favorite city in the entire world, and I love it. And that just re-energized me too. Just being, I lived there for 3 years and after I graduated from college, and it for some reason, I can't explain it, but it completely re-energizes me. And, And it's around Christmas time. New York is just, it's amazing.
It's got an extra vibrancy.
Yeah. The magic and is just, it's so evident, so tangible.
And it was fun to watch you get forced to shut down and then to see you laugh again.
I know. I'm a...
Does anyone out there have a hard time shutting down for the holidays or shutting down at all, finding that balance in your life? Because we can grow up in a society where work is what you're rewarded for. And downtime is sometimes what you're judged for. And the reality is we need that balance, that downtime. We need that time with our friends, with our family to discover new relationships, new friendships, new dynamics, as in your case mm-hmm. this year. And to have those feed us in a balanced, positive way. It feeds your creativity. It feeds your life. And life is a cycle. I mean, we are constantly
it absolutely is
shedding
a cycle.
Our skin and growing new skin. That is a cycle of healing. Our hair falls out. It grows back in. We lose an eyelash. We get another one. It's a constant rejuvenation. And if we don't give ourselves not only the right nutrition and the right balance, we stop healing. And we get into a rut. And healing is a constant process. 818-602-4929. We want to hear from you. So we did something really fun this Christmas, too, is we brought home Comet with us.
Yes.
Comet is my dog.
She was so amazing.
She was so funny. I had arranged for her to ride with us in Bulkhead because I didn't want to check her in. Mm-mm. She's a big dog. She does not go under any seat in front of you. And
she doesn't fit in a little bag.
She doesn't fit in a little bag, although she'd be adorable.
Aww.
In a little backpack. You'd picture her little head sticking out of a backpack.
She wouldn't fit in a backpack.
No, she wouldn't. But I'm giving her a little shout out because I was so proud of her. She handled it like a pro. We went to LAX. She just waited in line and sat next to me. She walked through the security gate.
She was
we
so
had
good.
To take off her collar and her chain and everything and have her walk through the little machine, and she just walked through, got to the other side, and sat and waited for me. She was amazing.
She was. And the thing about Comet is she's a very nervous dog a lot of the time with certain things. So, you know, we tried to practice with her. We went to a Barnes & Noble and tried to have her practice on an escalator, and she was terrified of the escalator.
She was not having it.
She was not having it, and we didn't really get a chance to practice anymore with her in crowds of people, and we were very nervous.
Can we just talk about that day in Barnes & Noble
oh,
for a
God.
Second? Oh, my God. We took her on. You can't go upstairs in Barnes & Noble without getting on the escalator.
Right.
We get Comet on the escalator. And
but we get her into the store, and then she sees the escalator, and she starts backpedaling.
She freezes,
and she starts with her little paws, like trying to walk backwards.
She was so suspicious.
Yeah, and you know, the security guard's like, what is going on with this dog? And we were just like, we tried to get her on this escalator.
It was crazy. I'm gonna finish the song. We're gonna take a story, then we'll take a quick break with a little song by Deborah Davis called Only Love Knows, which I really like. But we get Comet on the escalator, we get her to the top. And I think she's just going to jump off, but she doesn't. She's freaked out, and it breaks one of her nails. Mm. And we start walking through Barnes & Noble, and we are leaving a trail of blood. It looked like a murder scene had taken place.
It looked like someone was stabbed.
It was awful. Comet didn't seem to care nor notice. And we went to get paper towels, and there's me and Becca just smearing blood all over the top floor.
Oh, my God.
Barnes & Noble, we're like, let's get out of here.
Yeah, it was so bad. We just took her down and left.
Oh, poor Comet.
But this trip was so successful. She walked like she owned the place. It was amazing.
She did. 818-602-4929. We're going to take a quick break with a little song by Deborah Davis called Only Love Knows. I want to hear from you when we get back. 818-602-4929. Give us a call. Let's hash it out.
We two in this boat shell. Only love knows. now I love where we are.
Deborah Davis, Only Love Knows, 818-602-4929. This is Kathy DeBono, your host. I'm here with my little buddy, Becca Cates. What are you doing? What is that?
I'm just making a weird face.
She's crossing her eyes at the microphone as though it can see her and respond back.
No, it can't.
No, it can't. 818-602-4929. I got a direct tweet from someone in the UK who simply says, Kathy, I gained way too much weight. What do I do now?
Oh, God. That's a pretty awesome tweet, actually. What do I do now?
What do I do now? That's pretty funny. I don't think you really need my help a whole lot with that one.
I think you know what to do. You just...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what? I think we got to give ourselves space to gain some weight at the holidays. So what?
Well, first of all, it's natural because when the weather gets colder, you need more, you know, you naturally want to be
warm.
There
you go. Use the climate control.
I always use the climate. I mean, even though global warming,
Oh, it doesn't exist according to our president.
No, yada, yada,
not our president, our former president,
yes.
Thank God.
You know, I mean, I know I like to hibernate. I feel like a bear most of the time. Well, mostly all the time I like to hibernate, but...
Becca.
What?
818-602-4929. If you have something you'd like to talk about, something you need to get off your chest, something you need a little advice on, we are here, 818-602-4929. I also want to tell people about my website, kathyisin.com. That's Kathy with a C. Listen, kids, I'm a psychotherapist. It's what I do. I'm also an empath. You can look that up and figure out what that is.
Yes. You can look it up.
Why'd you just roll your eyes?
Because she has such an incredible ability that she oftentimes will be able to read.
Oh, I see.
Your feelings, even when you're not necessarily
ready. I do this to Becca all the time.
Yes, that's why I rolled my eyes. But she's very, very gifted. She is.
Much to Becca's dismay, because you sort of can't get away from it, can you?
No, I can't. And I also wear my emotions on my sleeve, but you are very helpful. And, you know, I love you.
So Kathy is in. Click the practice tab. I get a lot of letters from folks who don't realize that there's a way to do this. I can't possibly write back to everyone that drops me a letter. I can't possibly even see all of them now. I used to like to read them all. I have an administrative assistant, a little girl named Shauna. She's very sweet. She will forward your letters on to me. If you would like to have more of a private exchange with me, there is a way to do that. I've set up a structure so that I can make that possible. And the details about that are on the, if you click the practice tab at kathyisin.com. There's also a chat room there on the radio show page. If you're listening to the show and you want to chat live with some folks while you listen, go to kathyisin.com and click the radio show tab. And you can also write in a letter that for just the radio. If you write radio mm-hmm. letter in the subject line, that's where we will find your letters. And sometimes we will read them on the air and open them up for discussion with the world. So the phone number is 818-602-4929. I'm here with Becca Cates. Becca.
Yes.
What are you doing today when we leave here? You have a meeting, don't you?
I do. I have a busy day. Again, my film is now taking over my life again, which is good.
Now, this is my question for you. Mm-hmm. What are you going to do to keep the balance that you found over the holidays? Because I'm going to out you a little bit right now. And since you've lent yourself mm-hmm. for the good of the world and our listeners, I'm going to out you a little bit in terms of losing your balance pretty quickly when you got back to work.
Mm-hmm. Yes. What
do you think is, and you said something really interesting to me this morning over coffee, which was, I know what I need to do to be healthy, but I can't make myself do it.
Mm-hmm.
I know that feeling. Mm-hmm. I know that lots of people know that feeling. What do you think that feeling is about?
Well, I know personally for me, it's a part of it is biological, for me, brain chemistry type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I also think it's part of my
said it this morning very well. You said it was your familiar zone.
I mean I think, you know, when people have certain ways and perspectives of looking at the world that they become familiar with, when they're suddenly told by people, professionals or friends or family, that they need to change their perspective because it's not the perspective they have isn't healthy. A lot of times, a lot of anger and a lot of resentment can come from that, I think, because they're telling you to leave your familiar, your comfort zone. And I think for me, I think there are a lot of factors why with work I totally get into this crazy work mode, which isn't so healthy for me. But you know, I think...
Well, you know, you're not alone. I mean, not alone out there, and we all struggle with this in some way or another. We know what's good for us,
mm-hmm.
and we've come to learn ourselves over time as well, so we know specifically what's good or bad for us as well.
Right.
And yet we still somehow are stymied by moving forward and doing it.
I think a lot of it has to do with, again, this is totally personal, with my relationship to art, and I feel like a lot of great artists have tortured souls, you could say, and I've always found that I'm the most creative when I'm not in the best, you know, I'm not in the healthiest state of mind, and I have, you know, been able to create some really incredible things with that.
Because it springs from the need for that expression.
Exactly. And so, you know, I found that when I'm healthier and happier, you know, I'm healthier and happier, which is a good thing.
So the question becomes,
how do you
keep both? Be healthy and happy, or do I want to feel the need to express all the time? And you know, you're not alone in that. There's a lot of artists out there, and this isn't your issue. You're not an addict, thank goodness. You're not dealing with this. It's mm-hmm. a tremendously hard road for a lot of folks. But there's a lot of musicians out there and a lot of artists and writers and actors and people who feel that if they get healthy, they will lose their talent. They will lose their artistic expression.
Absolutely.
And for some folks, that comes to fruition. But what they find on the other side is a healthier, happier state of being, and they realize they'd rather have that.
Right. And I mean, and with happiness and health comes more stable relationships, with your family, with friends, with your partners, just being able to enjoy life.
Right.
Expressing
the pain of not having that, you end up
having
that. And for a lot of people, I want to put this out there too, it doesn't change their talent. It doesn't change their need for expression. One of my favorite musicians, Beth Hart, is a perfect example of this. She's a drug addict who was addicted to meth for a long time. And she's been clean now for a handful of years. And the first time I went to go see Beth after she got clean, I wondered, you know, what that difference would be like. And she has found even more of a connection to her soul and her art. And so that does happen.
Right. I mean, I think when people have these sort of, you know, emotional or, you know, issues, you know, it's hard. I mean, I know I have a problem with comparing myself to people. And so, and I am in a very small graduate program. So it's a very high pressure industry. A lot of everybody's type A, everybody's hardworking. You know, and so we tend to compare ourselves to the peers that we find ourselves surrounded by. And, it can be really difficult, but
it can be a little bit a brain game, quite frankly.
Oh, absolutely. It's such a game because the interesting part about this whole game is that, you know, you tell yourself these silly stories and intellectually, you know, that you're doing great. You're accomplishing all these things. And, you know, you have so much ahead of you. The world is your oyster, but your emotional side is telling you other things. And so I think the challenge, I know for me and for a lot of people, is to marry your emotional and your intellectual sides.
Well, it's to take that emotional side that you talk about and recognize the thoughts that it's creating. So the fear creates the thought, oh my God, I'm behind, I'm not as good as that person. Those are the thoughts that then come in and become destructive.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a new way of looking at yourself and a new way of putting yourself in a healthy frame of mind and allowing yourself to let go of the angsty frame of mind. You're not going to stop moving. You're not going to stop being propelled forward. In fact, you're probably going to have more motivation when one feels balanced and happy. But we do avoid it in order to stay in a familiar place. I know I've heard a lot of people say, well, what if I do everything that's healthy for me and I don't get any, nothing changes and I don't get any better? And they don't want to know that disappointment. They'd rather keep the hope that, well, I can still do it in the future.
Right.
And
right.
they don't want to know the disappointment.
Right.
But what you end up doing is instead of being afraid to fall down the stairs, you just end up lying at the bottom of the stairs.
That's true.
For the rest of your life.
It's true. I mean, and I think, you know, some people like being at the bottom of the stairs for whatever reason. And I, you know, it's you know, Kathy has a way of giving tough love to me, which I need a lot of the time. And so, you know, I need to get that motivation to get out of whatever cycle. You know, when Kathy said that life is a cycle, it is a cycle. And I think not only is it a cycle that you keep regrowing new skin and, you know, sort of regenerating, you know, who you are, but also sometimes you find your past creeping up on you and becoming, you know, coming back to haunt you, so to speak. But it's not necessarily a bad thing.
Yes. You're right. And on that note, I want to start thanking my sponsors, Blagaspot.com, LuckyDogLeather.com, WeHaveToStopNow.tv. If you haven't seen that series, you really need to.
Always got to plug it.
Come on. We did a lot of work. It was a lot of fun.
Oh, of course.
Thank you guys for being here. KathyIsIn.com. We have Animal Intuitive Danielle McKinnon is coming back on January 31st, so please don't miss that. We worked her to the bone last time. This time I want to ask her some questions about how she does what she does. Every Tuesday at noon we are here. Kathy is in, and I will see you soon, because right now I'm out.
Kathy is in 5-minute feature.
Musician Deborah Davis.
You can't stuff my soul into your pocket.
Listening to Kathy is in with Kathy DeBono.
WLA Talk Radio, the home of irreverent and entertaining and cool talk. We say what we want.